Hello and welcome. It is episode 40 of Coffee Talk. My name is Trevor Huth, despite what the screen might be telling you if you're watching on YouTube. And I am joined by not Nate Kosher, a Nate Kosher imposter, and or Nate got a different haircut. I'm not really sure.
I mean, yeah, it could absolutely be. You never know, right? Like, I mean, if you look at the screen, I'm actually Trevor Huth.
I'm so sorry.
You know, you can't trust what you see on the internet.
Right? I guess you can't do that. So that's actually Scott Chu. I am so happy to have Scott joining us here on Coffee Talk today, not only because he's a Tigers fan, but also because we get to talk hitters and hitters that can help you in the Coffee Talk sense, your end of the roster, your end of the draft guys. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Scott, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing a lot better than the little babies in the room with me right now. I've got my 2-year-old twins and they're just moody right now. So if you guys hear anything like that, that's a couple of moody little kids. I actually just spent the whole weekend driving back and forth from New York City. I live in West Michigan, so it's a long hike, but I was able to participate in Tout Wars this year. So just got back from that, doing the NL only auction, had a lot of fun with that. And they apparently don't like it when I'm gone for that long. So again, you might hear some noise in the background. That's just some little kids who apparently have not had enough of me over the last 4 hours, where they both felt like they had to be touching me at all times.
My theory is that they're just sad that Jace Young got sent down to minor league camp today, since you are in Michigan.
Well, and that's just a misery we're all sharing here in this household.
So how did Tout Wars go? Are you happy with your team?
Happy enough. It's the first time I've ever done an NL only league, right? Mm-hmm. I've done AL only. I've done plenty of mixed. I've been in the 15 team mixed auction for the last two seasons. Number one, in-person auctions, a lot of fun. And they do a really nice job, like just keeping it moving and fast. Mm-hmm. So that's a pleasant surprise. And it's kind of fun to see the reactions in the room. Cause Gray Albright's in this one, Tristan Cockcroft, like a lot of folks that I sort of cut my teeth listening to, forever ago. So a lot of fun with that. It's really fun to get like Tristan Cockcroft mad at you because you used the last $4 of your auction budget on Brett Beatty and he does not have $4 to go against you. That's fun. But there's also, when you're in an NL only auction, there's this is true in mixed leagues too, but there's steep drop offs at positions and they can sneak up on you. And that's what happened to me. Really at shortstop and third base. So at least with my shortstop, I got a guy who plays every day, but it's Orlando Arcia. So it's like not someone good in an OBP league, but it's someone who plays every day. And then at third base, it's a combo of Chris Taylor and Brett Beatty. And we'll just see how it goes.
We could put a pin in that Brett Beatty discussion because he'll be third base eligible. And it looks like at least to start the season, he might be the starting second baseman.
Yeah, at hitting the ball in the air sometimes, like still not very often. And that's the big thing with him, right? Like if he could get the ball in the air more than once in a blue moon, he might be something. But so far when he gets to the major league level, and that's why we'll talk about this more, I'm sure. But sometimes I take that spring training numbers with like a grain of sand because we know we can hit minor league guys, right? We already knew that. It's major leaguers who prepare for him know how to get him. So that's the part that still keeps me hesitant. I'm excited he's getting a chance, right? And at second base. So within time, I can also get some extra eligibility, but I can't really buy in yet. So I'm like, okay, when the major league guys are preparing for you, what will you do then?
I'm so happy that you are hesitant on spring training stats. Cause usually that's just me, Nate will be like, oh, look at this dude doing awesome. I'm like, it's spring training. And not that spring training stats are irrelevant completely, but especially with like pitchers and stuff, I always say take it with a grain of salt because these are like relief outings. They are not, this is not trying to get through the lineup several times. This is go out there, show your stuff, leave.
Well, and like it's funny because people are very ready to accept that about the pitchers, right? They're leaving a little off, they're trying new things. But if that's what you believe, which is true, it is 100% what is happening out there. You have to do the same on the hitting side, knowing that hitting is a reactive thing, right? Like that's why Nick gets to have so much fun talking pitching, because pitchers make plans. Hitters make plans, but not at all in the same way. They make contingencies. If this, then that. If that, then this, if A, then B, then if B, then C. They can sort of plan, but they don't know till the ball's out of the hand and they've got fractions of a second to make a decision. right? Pitchers don't at the last second go fastball. No, slider. Okay. Right. Like they know, like, before they set up what pitch they're going to be and where they want it. So for them, it's about execution. For hitters, there's a different layer. And so if the pitchers aren't attacking you the way they would in a regular game, then you're not getting necessarily full regular game experience, right? And that's why with the vets, we say, like, we don't really care what's happening in spring training because we've seen them in the majors, right? We know what that looks like. In the spring, you're just saying, like, do they look healthy? And then for the young guys, man, it's really tough. And I'm just going to mention him now so we can save, because I know this is like the first person that comes to mind, Cam Smith, right? What he's doing for the Astros in camp, he's going off. We can talk about him more later, but like the most important context with Cam Smith has nothing to do with spring training and everything to do with the fact that if you include spring training as double A action, he has 50 plate appearances of double A action. That's it, right? He was in college for most of last year, right? Cam right. Smith has barely seen any major league pitching at all. Still, stuff from a major league pitcher, I'm pretty sure he's seen like two of them, right? I think he's seen two. And so he has kind of like two plate appearances against major league pitching. And look, we've seen guys come up and not really do anything and like not really need double A. But if you think about it, the guys that are like that, there's two that come to mind. One, Juan Soto. He's the famous one, right? He wasn't in double A that long, but he had also been in the Mets system since he was 17. He had been a pro for like 3 years by the time he comes to the majors. They knew what they had, right? Cam yeah. Smith was drafted last year, right?
And traded.
There is a guy. Yeah. Then there's Nolan Chanuel. I don't think I ever say his name right. But over in for the Angels, and he's a different thing too because he was this like already out of the box player who's all hit tool, no power. He's like I hate comparing guys to Luis Arias because we all do it all the time because it's just a certain archetype of player, just these slappy, like the slappy guys. And it's weird that he's a first baseman, but he didn't need a ton of seasoning because he was one of those guys where it's like, look, what you see is pretty good, but it's all you're ever going to get. So, I mean, there might be some steps he can take eventually, but they were ready to put him in because they were a terrible team with no first baseman anywhere on the roster and anywhere in their development system. So they decide to give this guy a month of action. But Cam Smith, let's say he does break camp. Are you saying they're just ready to like throw away Chaz McCormick? They've already stuck Altuve on one half of the outfield. They just tried to get, I mean, they've got Isak Paredes, who there's a reason they went and got him. It's because he ever
pulls
since
ball in the air.
Oh my God. Can you just think about if the Tigers had stopped letting him be a spray hitter? And like when I feel like the Rays got him and they're like, hey, by the way, we noticed you're pretty good at controlling the bat, right? You kind of seem to put the ball where you want. So just put it right there every time.
Okay.
And he was like, though, oh, okay.
Like on that though, he started doing that in Toledo the year before they traded him away. I wrote a whole thing on Bless You Boys about him. Like he might be coming back, but he's doing this now. Which is more interesting. And anyway, that's going off on a tangent. Also, since you mentioned Nolan Chanuel, I want to mention something. I've said it a couple times, but I am now one of the two going deep managers for Pitcher List. And one of the writers for that section, Lucas C. Hafer, he was with us. He had to take a little bit of an absence. He came back, just wrote something on Nolan Chanuel and about why he doesn't have power. And it was awesome. He's very technical and very scientific. And how he presents the information. And I was interested in Nolan Chanuel in fantasy leagues. And then I read it and I'm less interested in Nolan Chanuel in fantasy leagues now for very specific reasons. So I just want to throw him out there, shout out one of my writers and make sure to go read that because it was an awesome, awesome piece.
Love going deep. Like it's you never know, you know, cause I a long, long time ago, I pretended to manage that section and it was fun to see what people come up with and you get a lot of really cool stuff. I know last year, one of the cool ones was the Westberg paradox, right? Mm-hmm. We were trying to, it was just because in our Discord, you know, plug for that kind of like, I got asked, you know, why does Jordan Westberg have such a high swinging strike rate and such a low strikeout rate? Like his swinging strike rate was like higher than his strikeout rate, like not exactly, but it was really close. And usually like the old back of the napkin math was like, you double the swinging strike rate, you get about a strikeout rate. His was so different. And the theory everybody had was like, oh, he must be choking up, right? Oh, I'm sure he's choking up. Had nothing to do with it, the article, really cool. But basically, it just talked about, no, it's because he's extremely aggressive early in counts. Anything near the zone he's swinging at. So yeah, he gets a lot of swinging strikes, but he barely ever gets to strike two, right? Much less strike three. So he's putting everything in play, and that was why. And so like those going deeps can really dig into that kind of stuff. So I'm actually going to have to go check out that Chanuel one, because he's a very interesting type of player. And in fantasy, if you're in a points league, he can provide some value because of like just what he is, like just a singles machine. But he's the type of player that's easier to talk yourself into, because you're like, well, he's got a really great hit tool and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, sometimes these guys are trying to do something very specific, right? Isak Paredes, Luis Arias, Nolan Chanuel, they are trying to do something very specific. So the logic that you use to evaluate them versus other hitters doesn't work, because they're not a regular hitter. They are a, you know, like they're that pizza shop that only makes pepperoni. Right, they're real good at it, but it's the only thing that they don't let anyone bring sausage into their establishment. Right, like no, we have cheese and pepperoni. That's it. That's all we do. I don't know if any of those actually exist, but they are what that would look like if, you know, that kind of shop did exist.
I have never heard that. That is awesome. And just to circle back around to a point you made earlier too about how pitchers, you know, prepare more and they have all this stuff, and so you have to think about hitters too. The hitters that I've been able to talk to, they have to split the plate in half. So even on your best days, a pitcher gets the whole plate with whatever pitches they want. And a hitter's like, let me try to read the spin, read what's coming out of his hand. And if I read it on the outer half and I'm hunting inside, I'm just going to take it. So when you yell, I always say this all the time, when you yell at your screen, like, how are my players taking these pitches? That's why they're looking for something. And that wasn't it.
They have an exclusionary mindset. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want it there. Right. They have to, like, because again, the human, it's the same thing we do in fantasy, right? Like generally the players we like to think about what player I'm going to add. I'm going to generally, if you're like anybody else, including myself, in a lot of cases, you're going to sort by like who's doing good recently. Right. Because your brain needs to, I can't just think about the entire pool of baseball players at one time to make a pick, right? I need an exclusionary mindset. I'm like, all right, I need this position, and I want to know about guys who are doing pretty well in the last 2 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I need to start my analysis. And again, the more you can expand on that, the better. But like, especially when you're under the gun and you're in pressure, like, oh man, lineups lock in 20 minutes, I got to figure something out. That's what you're going to do. Hitters have to do that at the plate, because they only get a fraction of a second to make a decision about swing, right? So it's a really interesting thing as you get into it. And it's something that can be easy to take for granted, especially in spring training, that the guys are still kind of going through that and they're not getting pitched to like a normal thing. Cause pitchers are just trying to warm up. They don't give a crap. Like, I'm not saying they don't want to get these guys out. There's a lot of guys competing for jobs, right? But they did not do a scouting report the same way they will come, you know, April, May, June.
Right. Absolutely. And oh man, it's so fun to watch the pitchers still when they're at full volume, and it's so fun to get hyped up about them. And I guess I haven't mentioned this yet, and I definitely should. The reason that hitting is coming up and we're talking about it so much is, you know how Nick does the pitcher list on pitcher list. Well, Scott's the hitter list on pitcher list. This is the dude who dives into all these hitters. So that's really going to be something that we are focusing on this episode. And you know what? I'm just going to ask it. We're, you know, 13 minutes in here or 14 minutes in, and I haven't asked it yet. So Mr. Hitter List, are you buying Spencer Torkelson?
He was so close to making that top 150. He's definitely in, because I've got my top 300. I updated it about a week ago. He's definitely in there. And there's two main reasons, right? So one is that the injury to Matt Vierling opened up a spot for him to play. Right. But now, and I was a little worried at first. I was like, okay, he's going to get time to play, but he's going to split time somewhere. Right. Like, he's only going to see lefties. Turns out that's not the case. Right. Like, looks like they're planning to play him just about every day. So, and they're going to like bat him fourth. They went from like, we're going to send you down to like, how do you feel about batting fourth every day? Right. Like, that's how these rosters kind of work themselves out sometimes. And so with Torkelson, again, I'm not like, I know he can get the ball in the air. Right. And the strikeout rate can get a little worrisome, but what's really interesting to me, and it's a really small sample, he's been really aggressive compared to usual in the spring. And I think it suits him. I think one of the ways he can cut down the strikeout rate is stop. We just talked about how hitters are exclusionary, but at some point you have to open up a little bit, because what if they never give you like fastball inner half, right? What if they just, I mean, like Miggy would have certain games where guys just didn't throw like to a whole area of the plate, cause they're like, yeah, he's not going to beat me like that today. And like Torkelson has a 30 home run season on his, like on his resume already. Pitchers have ideas about what they want to do. And so far in his major league career, he's struggled to adapt to that in year, like in his second year. And I'm very interested to see if one of his adjustments is to just be a little bit more aggressive early in counts. And just like, let it rip, man. He's strong. He doesn't need to hunt for like Juan Soto is like the model of, if you were to say like, I don't know anything about a guy, but I want him to be the perfect hitter. You basically talk about what Juan Soto or Yordan Alvarez does. And you're like, yeah, that, right. There's like no weaknesses. They don't have swing and miss. They have tons of power, hits all fields, blah, blah, blah. But like, that's not the only way to succeed in the league, right? In fact, most guys can't be Juan Soto. They have to succeed another way. Torkelson has more pads, I think, than he thought he did, because he had all his home runs. He's like, all right, I'm just going to hunt for home run balls, right? And he's talked about this before in interviews as well. But like, dude, you're not always going to get that, right? So be aggressive, but like, change your exclusion criteria, right? And that's easier said than done, obviously, right? But if he can find some adjustments, if he can figure out the way pitchers are attacking him faster, that's when we see guys really take a next step.
Man, just saying being more aggressive, hunting, right? This is a conversation in one way or another that I have a lot about being patient versus being passive at the plate. Oh, man. Right.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And this is so funny. All the things you can talk about with hitters, right? Don't be passive. Be patient, be aggressive. Like, what do we do with the plate here, right? But I think it depends on the hitter, because I would talk about a guy like Emmanuel Rodriguez all the time, and I am concerned about him at the major league level because he doesn't swing. He's passive. He's a prospect for the Twins who's, you know, likely to get a call-up soon. But with Torkelson, it's interesting to hear you say, be more aggressive, right? Just swing, pick something, and try to hit the ball out. It's very interesting. I mean, because the main concern that I've always heard is he doesn't hit velocity very well. If it's 95 plus, he struggles to get to it.
Well, it's just harder to hit that. Like, right. It's sort of like almost every guy that comes up, we're like, he's struggling against breaking balls. That's because in the minors, they, like, when they would see a starter, that dude would have like one breaking ball that he could throw for strikes. And so
it wasn't as good as the breaking balls that you're gonna see at the big league level.
And now you got starters have to have two, right? They have to have two things besides fastball. There are some minor exceptions, but they're like Spencer Strider, who you're not gonna hit anyway. So, like, if the Twins are an interesting example, because it felt like back in the day they always had these guys that swung a lot, but just kind of slapped the ball around everywhere. Like, they had this amalgamation of guys who are like Joe Mauer types. So it's like, walking is, you know, I can do it, but why? I'll just slap the ball here, slap the ball there. All of a sudden it's a double. Let's go. But no, they've got two prospects who have this problem, right? Because that's Edward Julien's problem, is that he's extremely passive. And part of that, I just wonder, you know, I openly speculate, in the minors, he can spit on every breaking ball and walk 16% of the time, right? Like, just never swing at them. You'll walk 16% of the time. And if they do end up
Rodriguez,
yeah, or 20. And I don't have access to the data right now, but I'd really like to see, like, okay, but are they swinging at breaking balls at all? I get it. A lot of them you can't swing at because they don't throw you breaking balls that are strikes. They don't throw you breaking balls that are something you can do something with. But like, you got to at least be able to hit them when they do give you one, right? When they hang one, you got to hit them. So he's a guy, you know, the guy who comes to mind who has yet to solve this problem, and I'm not really waiting for him to solve this problem. I don't think he will. It's Miguel Vargas, who's with the White Sox now. And that was, I mean, he had the same problem, and that passivity turned into, and this happened with Julien. It happened with Vargas. That passiveness turns to strikeouts, because you're going to fall behind and get two strikes real quick if you're not willing to swing at something that's in the zone. Right? You don't have to swing at everything in the zone, right? But if you're always letting the first pitch or two in the zone go, all of a sudden you're behind, and that's when you can get fooled, especially as a young player.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? The Twins are a good organization because there's news coming out. There's spring training news. Fun. Well, not fun. Spring training news at all. You hate to see it. And we are going to talk about that in just a moment. Right now, we're going to take our first quick timeout here on Coffee Talk, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I am joined by Scott Chu. So happy to have Scott with us. And we were talking Twins. We're talking, well, it started with Torkelson, and I feel a lot better about Torkelson now that Scott has talked a little bit. But then it goes to the Twins, and the Twins had a huge blow happen very recently. They are going to start the season without Royce Lewis. And I think, Scott, you're a great person to have here for that, because what do you do? How do you pivot off of Royce Lewis in fantasy leagues? I mean, I know you probably already had a contingency plan because he's not somebody who's been able to stay healthy. And I know with the Twins, you're probably looking at Brooks Lee and Jose Miranda, some combination of that. But I guess if you drafted Royce Lewis and you didn't follow it up with another solid third baseman, do you have any thoughts about what you can or where you can go from there?
You know, my first thought is it's sympathy. But also, you know, it's a little bit of a problem of your own making, right? So whenever you talk about a player like Royce Lewis, just to talk about that draft strategy for a little bit, just in case, you know, you haven't tried to cram a draft in yet. It's okay to take the injury risk, guys, but you got to have another third base eligible.
Oops, I think Scott froze up on us, so we'll see if he can come back. But what he was saying is you have to have somebody else who can play third base. You know, go for the injuries, guys. I have tried to go after Royce Lewis in several leagues. I'm a huge fan of Royce Lewis. I was buying all offseason in Dynasty and in keeper leagues, whatever I can do, just because Royce Lewis is good. Royce Lewis can bring a lot to your fantasy baseball teams. But as Scott was preparing to say, it is important to plan around that. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to take one right away, but you should take somebody who is third base eligible. I mean, if you look right now, we were not planning on talking this high, so I have to find it, but wherever his ADP is at, you probably should take another third baseman that is relatively close, you know, to him, just so you have someone else who can, you know, fill in, because there are certain, you can go to the free agency list. Connor Norby's usually on him. Ryan McMahon's definitely a sneakier option. But it's just so hard to find guys at the last minute. And I think that's where people can run into some issues. If you go, okay, well, it's going to be Royce Lewis's year, which is something that I've absolutely was thinking heading into the year, but then all of a sudden this happens and it doesn't seem like he's going to be out for long, but he certainly is someone that is going to be hard to replace. While we wait for Scott to come back, I just want to say that I am a huge fan of the White Sox decision to announce Sean Burke as their opening day starter. Last season, K per nine in the minors of close to 13. He spent most of the season in AAA, 12.03, but if you add his complex time, it's closer to 13. And at the big league level, he threw 19 innings, 10 strikeouts per nine, with a 1.42 ERA. Now, interesting if you're going based off of just performance to name him the opening day starter, because his spring training performance not as great, but certainly somebody who I think can be pretty interesting. And if you have room for a spec ad, he's somebody that I'm definitely, you know, just why not take a chance on it. If you have room on your fantasy rosters. I mean, I did the same thing last year. Now, granted, I play in mostly Dynasty and keeper leagues, but I did the exact same thing last year with Garrett Crochet, and all of a sudden you get a Garrett Crochet. So Sean Burke, definitely somebody that I'm interested in terms of a spec ad. And this has been Trevor Huth's random thoughts while we wait for Scott Chu to give the smart opinions. So I tried to fill in what you were starting to say. You need to have that contingency plan if you're going to go after the injury risk guys like Royce Lewis, Scott.
Yeah, sorry. My little one jumped behind the massive barrier that I have and fell on the router. So it worked out really well. So, it's bedtime for them anyway. So that was a good time to make that call. But so with Royce Lewis himself, right? Like that, this is something that you already kind of planned on. Now, number one, this doesn't mean you should take him off your board entirely, right? Hamstrings are a little tricky, but there are places that you can kind of grab him. As far as like their lineup itself, I mean, this does give an opportunity, I think, to Jose Miranda, Brooks Lee, a little bit Edouard Julien, who we were just talking about, who has some intrigue in OBP leagues if he ever, decides to like swing it more stuff in the zone and kind of clear up his contact issues. But there's a couple guys on that team with contact issues. As far as like what you're going to do, let's say you've already drafted and you leaned a little too heavy on Royce Lewis, right? Jose Miranda is out there. He's someone who probably wasn't drafted in most leagues, and he can provide some things, right? But Jose Miranda, like, your brain might remember him as better than he is. And I don't want to say he's a bad hitter. He can just be a bit limited. There's not a ton of power there. Like, we saw him for 121 games last year. He hit 9 home runs. His sort of first season, his breakout before they decided they didn't like him anymore the first time, he hit 15 in 125 games. He's unlikely to exceed any of those numbers, right? Like 120 games is about as many as he's going to get. And, double digit home runs is just something you can barely count on. So it's mostly like ratios that you hope aren't empty, right? And they're kind of empty. The Twins offense isn't that good, and Miranda kind of bounces around. Like, when does he play? When doesn't he? I think, again, if you're trying to like be like, okay, who's on my wire? You're looking in really deep leagues. You should start, number one, hopefully you have another guy at third base and you're really just trying to replace a hitting spot, right? Uh-huh. There's a lot of value in that. And then you can focus less on like another, you don't necessarily need another third base eligible guy, right? You had a second third base eligible guy because you had Royce Lewis. So you can then move on from there and just say, okay, I'm going to address a specific need at hitting. Otherwise, man, you're going to be in a tough spot. Third base is a position that drops off really hard. Maybe if you're lucky, you're in one of those leagues where Ryan McMahon is too.
It's a name I said.
Yeah, he's too oatmeal-y to get excited about, which is a real thing, right? He just is. You're not going to be that excited. So that would be one name.
Connor Norby was the other name I threw out. He's usually probably going to be on free agents list. I know there's a lot of, he's not somebody I'm going after in redraft leagues to be my starting third baseman, but in a pinch, I did like his hitting ability in the minors, and he should be playing third for the Marlins, who are not very good. So, he's another guy who could be out there.
Yeah. And then if you don't have a specific need, right? You're like, I just want a little bit of everything for now until I get a better feel for my team. Joey Ortiz might be out there as well. And he's, I don't remember, in Yahoo leagues, you'll be able to use him at third and short, at least. I'm not sure if he'll qualify for second base. I'd have to look. He appeared there a few times. Four starts. So can't use him at second, but you can use him at third and short. And he does a little bit of everything. He's like that jack of all trades, master of none type. His batting average, not very good, right? His OBP is better, but it's not great. It's about, it was .329 last year. That's probably what you should expect again. He had 11 home runs, 11 stolen bases, almost 60 runs scored, almost 60 RBI. These are like, he's the definition of a mixed league replacement level player. Mm-hmm. But, if you're just looking for a name that like, I know it's going to be there, he is a replacement level player, and there is value in those when you are replacing a player on your roster. So he is someone that I think who could fill a hole until you're ready, like in the regular season, to start chasing random hot bats.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's think about this injury risk when you're drafting, because it is draft season. So I do like to add in some element of what's a draft strategy. You have Royce Lewis. Let's assume you know, this was a week ago and Royce Lewis is healthy and we're all preparing for him to have a monster year and finally have a healthy year. But you know, there's injury risk involved. He is ADP right around 117 right now on NFBC. Is that a place where you are taking a player with that kind of injury risk?
It's with injury. So every player has three kinds of risks, right? Mm-hmm. They have injury risk. They have opportunity risk, right? Like, are they going to be, if assuming they were healthy, are they allowed to start at a position? And then they have performance risk, right? Like, can they consistently perform at a level that's worth being on your fantasy roster? So you look at those three risks and you try to balance them in turn, right? Like, I generally don't like players who have two of those problems, right? So like Royce Lewis only has one problem. We know that when he's healthy, he'll probably be pretty good. Now, it's been tough because he's on and off the field so much that sometimes his performance is really inconsistent. But we know that there's a lot of upside to his ability, right? And we've seen it. We've seen it in extended stretches even. So I'm not so worried about that. And I know he's going to be the third baseman when he's active, right? Like, yeah, I'm not worried. He's not going to get benched, right? Even if he's bad for 2 months, they're not going to bench him. If he's healthy, right, he's going to play. So it's one kind of risk. And then you can start weighing the upside and be like, okay, if I believe this is his upside, I want to discount. How deep is the discount? That's obviously a player by player sort of discussion. I had Royce Lewis ranked as my 85th hitter prior to the injury. And again, mostly I'm just talking about how, you know, again, last season he struggled, right? It's funny. He sort of had a tale of two halves because he had an injury. He had lots of injuries last year, but he sort of had this one that he had his first injury that delayed the start to the season. And then he had this first bit where he played really well, 24 games. He hit .292. He slugged .685, right? The Royce Lewis that we got excited about a year ago, like 1 year ago today, we were talking about Royce Lewis as like a top 40, top 50 pick, right? That ability is all there. But now you have like, you sort of get into this double concern of like, I don't know exactly what he looks like when healthy, because he was real bad after that, right? Like, he had the second injury, came back, and he just wasn't quite the same. And players who have a lot of injury risk have this problem. Sometimes they come back from an injury because they need to contribute to their team, but they're not 100%, right? So it's a difficult thing to balance that. Like, obviously his price has to come down because he's already hurt.
Right.
I'm willing to take injury risk players, right? Ronald Acuna, right? He's an injury risk. He always has been. The difference with him is if he plays 140 games, he's going to hit darn near 40 home runs. At least I get it. Like, last season, that's not the guy he looked like, but the two seasons he's been totally healthy. That's what he's done, right? Mm-hmm. The times he's done it, he's that kind of dynamic. He broke basically how auction calculators worked the following season, because they valued him like $20 higher than every other player because of the ability he had. So I generally want to see one type of risk. So if they have injury risk, I don't want performance risk, and I don't want, you know, starting job risk. I can only handle the injury risk.
Okay. So that leads to, I think, a good follow-up, because when I was looking at this ADP, I'm thinking, well, would I rather just let Royce Lewis pass me by and see if there's a better contingency plan later if I haven't gotten one of the other third basemen ahead of him, right? So if I know that Royce Lewis is a potential to get hurt, I think, you know, one thing I might do is wait and try to get Paredes, that we talked about, around 200, and bet on him to be able to pull the ball into the Crawford boxes, and then maybe also go with a Josh Jung type, who is also an injury risk, but, you know, is coming back, should have the opportunity to be the everyday third baseman in Texas, right? So it seems like it depends on how you feel about the player, I guess, which is a short-winded way to say what you just said, right? Because Royce Lewis at one spot is fine and good, and I would probably pay the price because I really want Royce Lewis to be good. Prospect guy, he's a former first overall pick. That's just how I go. But if you don't want to do that, I feel like there's other injury risks that you could get lower, like Josh Jung, I think is the point that I'm making.
Yeah, Josh Jung's an interesting one because I don't want to overreact to spring stuff, right? But man, up until the 14th, he looked like a different guy, right? He was barely striking out in the spring. He was hitting the ball hard. It looked awesome. I was like, wow, this is the guy I've been excited for. And then, of course, in his last three games, he has 9 at-bats and 8 strikeouts. that's the Josh Jung I also know. So that's an interesting one. You know, it's funny. I'm thinking about, you know, these injuries happen, and what happens is people will sort of ask me like, so where do I take him now? Instantly, right? And a really good tool to use is, you know, first just take your projection, whatever it is, and prorate it. Just like knock some games off. Already had done that though, you know, in this case. So it's hard to say how many more to take off. But what I would normally do heading into a draft is I'd say, okay, Royce Lewis, right? Right now he's been, you know, over the last couple of days prior to the injury news, he was going as third baseman number 12, right? Right in between Matt Chapman and Eugenio Suarez. Well, obviously I want both those guys more than him now, but then I just kind of keep going down the list until I see someone where I'm like, I definitely want Royce Lewis before them. And that's where I'll kind of pencil it in, right? I'll find where that guy is. Like, let's say I'm looking here, the 23rd third baseman off the board right now is Christopher Morel. I know for sure I want Royce Lewis more than Christopher Morel. The one above him is Max Muncy, and in batting average leagues, I'm okay with it. In OBP, I'm not. Willie Castro, a little bit earlier than that. His ADP is 225, and Willie Castro, it's like, if I took him, it was only because he kind of steals and has a lot of eligibility. That's probably where I am with Royce Lewis, right? Because now we're talking about guys who don't have a ton of upside. They're just sort of like fill in. To me, a good question is like, do I want Royce Lewis or do I want Mikel Garcia? Right. Well, again, by that time, I know if I need steals, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny because we talk about like Mikel Garcia or Royce Lewis in a vacuum. Like, my dude, we're 200 picks into the draft. There's no vacuum.
Right. That's a good point.
The vacuum is over. Right. And so,
So
when you're doing the draft, like the first thing that's going to matter is like, have I already taken on a bunch of injury risk? Right. Like, if I'm already counting on, let's say, Strider to come out and be good, and I'm already counting on like a hitter or two, you know, I took Acuna early, you're pretty much taking Lewis off your board because you can't have, you know, two guys that you're like, well, you know, if they play, maybe they'll be really good. Right. Like, you're trying not to do that. So if you're in a draft, you know, definitely prefer Paredes. He's moving up a bit, but there's this sort of like cliff after Paredes. Right. So after Paredes, that's where you see Young. I think that's an interesting discussion, right? I think they both are very risky, but they both have a lot of upside. So that's around pick 200. And I think around pick 200 is if Royce Lewis is still on the board, I'm evaluating my team to say, like, can I take this on, right? Is it worth it? Do I need another corner infield eligible guy? And can I absorb that kind of injury risk? Because for a lot of us, Royce Lewis is not going to be able to be on our board anymore because we've already taken on the injury risk, right? Or we've, you know, we got two good, you know, we got a third baseman and a corner guy who we really like early on, right? That would have been on our roster even before a healthy Royce Lewis got drafted. So you're going to, I mean, I hate to just say like, oh, you're going to have to figure it out for yourself, but you're kind of going to have to figure it out for yourself based on how you draft. And when you're in that point, like, that's my advice would be find the spot where you're like, I'd rather have the lotto ticket than, you know, the term that's being used a lot this spring is oatmeal, right? At some point you're going to say, I'd rather have the lotto ticket than the oatmeal. And like our proud leader, Nick, like he sets that level really high, right? Cause he's got that Toby where he's like, you know, I want someone better than a Toby all the time. So with pitching, he sets that level really high where he's like, I'd rather have the lotto ticket and see what happens. That's why he's willing to rank Garrett Crochet second, right? As a starting pitcher. Because he's like, no, I'd rather, because if it works out, it's great. So he sets that really high. And then other people, like a lot of the folks in really deep leagues, they'll set that level really low, right? They're like, no, I'd way rather have, you know, the oatmeal. I'd rather have the, you know, the Jose Mirandas of the world, right? I'd rather have Ryan McMahon, right? I mean, that's going to be a classic conundrum, right? Ryan McMahon's going to play. I know exactly what he's going to do. I just don't know if I care, right? So you got to find that level for you on a player like Royce Lewis, who has such an extreme injury risk.
You know, and your point about how the draft is going is a really good one. I say it all the time. I don't go into drafts with a plan. I don't make a plan until at least round five, just because you never know who's going to be there. So I don't want to go in thinking I have to get this, and this right now, because all of a sudden somebody better's there and you got to throw a wrench in it anyway. I'd rather take best available for the first five rounds, because these are our, depending on league size. I mean, obviously if I'm in like a 20 person league, five rounds is a little aggressive on that, but like, you want to, I just want to take those top guys as much as possible and then figure it out from there as what do I need? And I want to reevaluate. And maybe five rounds is too many. I don't win a whole lot of fantasy leagues, but I just agree with you in that you're not talking in a vacuum at a certain point, right? So when you're asking advice, should I take this guy or this guy? Well, what does your team look like? It's the same question I ask all the time when people come to me with dynasty trades. Should I do this trade here? Well, are you rebuilding right now? Are you looking to win? What is your competitive window look like? It's the same when you're drafting, right? Where's your team at? What do you need?
I mean, dynasty is a great point. After you do your initial dynasty startup draft, there is no vacuum. It's never coming back, right? Yeah. There's no vacuum. It's all about your team's context. And I like that point about, I don't really come in with a plan. Like, I do often have a plan and I throw it away. Like, there's so many times where it just doesn't work because I'm like, hey, you know what? I love the depth of hitting at the top, right? The first couple tiers of hitters are so deep. I want as many of them as I can get. And there's a lot of creamy middles with the pitchers, right? I think I can build a pretty good staff in a 12-team league without grabbing an ace. And every single time, like, that is my plan. Like, in my head, I know for a fact, given, if I did 100 drafts, right, that is the strategy I would use 60, 70 times, right? The problem is we actually do a much smaller number of drafts than that. And you never know what part of the sample you're going to get because there's been plenty of times where I was like, yeah, so I didn't want to take a pitcher for the first three rounds. And these idiots let Scooble come to me in the second. What am I supposed to do? Right. Yeah. I'm a human. I got to do that. I got to make that move. Like, it's good value. It's my favorite player on the whole planet. Like, it wasn't something I expected. Right. Cause that starts happening in the first round.
Immediately.
In the first round, you might be like, oh, I don't want to take, I'm not going to worry about second base. And then you're sitting there in the early second round and like people are worried about Mookie Betts or something. And you're like, well, shoot. Right. Like, I guess I'm taking a second baseman.
Right. Well, and that's the one plan I ever make. If I'm at the turn, if I'm at the back turn, I want pocket aces every single time. Like if I could get Skeens and Scooball for some reason picking, at that turn somewhere, I'm going to go for it. But then again, somebody jumps at Skeens early. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm taking a hitter now. You know what I mean? It's like, the plan that I decide to make will go wrong a lot.
Well, and sort of a theme we're kind of coming to here is like contingencies. You got to have contingencies. Like I'd really like to go as many hitters as I can early. But if I end up taking two pitchers in the first five rounds, because I just could not turn down the value. Like, do I still think I can build a good team? Right. Or like I'm very comfortable punting steals, but I don't always like the word punting because when I'm punting steals, I mean, I'm punting steals in the draft. Doesn't mean I'm punting them forever. Right. It means I'll probably spend a little extra of my fab resources to get them. Right. I know I'm short. I'm not going to go total zero, maybe in a categories league, but in a roto, I can't go total zero, but I'm going to be like, I'm not trying to get third in steals on draft day. I'm trying to be like in the bottom half and hope that I'll be able to bring in enough steals to just, give myself a couple extra points. Right. Because I'm going to focus on everything else. Or in a 12 teamer, right. Standard 12 teamer, you can kind of just like punt saves in the draft because there's gonna be guys on the wire who close. They're gonna be there. So if you really want them, you can go get them. Sure, it can be a tough use of fab, and ideally you're not spending all your fab on speculative closers, right? Well, I'll tell you, that's a really difficult way to live. It's a way to give yourself a lot of heartburn really fast, but it is a viable strategy. And if it's something you're comfortable doing, all you're really telling yourself is, at what point do I pull the trigger and say, all right, I'm not going to worry about it anymore. Right. I have that point for steals. And quite frankly, about half the time I hit it. Right. I'm just like, I just didn't want to pay up unless I was able to grab, like, I was drafting fourth and I'm like, well, I love Ellie De La Cruz. I'm in. Boom. Right. Like I've got my steals, so I'm not punting it. But a lot of times I'm picking in the like back half of the first round and I'm doing a lot of Yordan Alvarez and Vlad Guerrero Juniors and maybe a Tarek Skubal. And I don't have any steals. Like I leave the first two rounds without any of them. And that's okay because I'm comfortable playing that way. That is one of the plans I have where it's like, I'm not planning on punting steals, but if I get to this point and I don't have them, I'm not gonna like completely go forward. Like in NFBC, I did end up getting my steals, but it's all in like later rounds. I've got my Kel Garcia on that team because I said, look, I have to know where my stolen base targets are later, and I'm comfortable going after them and paying a little extra for a Jake McCarthy and a Michael Garcia. And all of a sudden I've got steals, and I don't care about the fact that they're limited as hitters because I loaded up on them early.
Yeah. Well, in Roto, I always go for the power speed guys. I'll spend the first four rounds. I'll reach for anybody who can hit home runs and steal bases, even if they strike out a lot or there's a lot of risk involved, because in Roto, that's what matters. I do love this idea about punting things in drafts, and I want to talk about it, but we are going to take another quick timeout. The clock's calling us, so we will talk about punting and maybe some late round hitters coming up in just a moment. You are listening to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I have Scott Chu with me right now. A lot of interesting conversation going on. We're talking drafts, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned punting categories. Because I'll be honest, for all the drafts that I've ever done, I have never thought about specifically punting categories. I punt positions. And I know you mentioned saves, right? I will punt relievers until my last three picks will be relievers if I feel like I need to do that. But the other one that I really wind up punting most of the time is catcher. And that is because there's so few top-end catchers. If I don't get one, if I don't feel comfortable taking one, I'm just like, well, I'll just take whoever it is at the end and basically get what I would get in the, you know, in the middle rounds. So that's interesting. I mean, I guess I should think about punting positions punting categories rather, because that's probably how you win. And I don't play redraft a lot anymore because I don't win a lot, but that has to more do with the fact that I'll draft prospects early and then they don't play till halfway through the year, cause I'm dumb. But anyway, that idea of punting, I like what you said about it. You're not forgetting it forever. Right. You're just doing it right now because you think you can find a higher value somewhere else, in whether that be another position or another category.
Yeah. Like, you know, Roto is the place where it's toughest to do this. I'll tell you this, yeah. In head to head categories, punting isn't even really punting. Right.
Yeah.
I talk about in head to head categories, I talk about ratio punting, quote unquote punting, a lot. Right. Because like you could be a last, if it was a Roto league, you might've gotten last, but you're not going to get zero wins in that category over the course of a year. Cause Kyle Schwarber hits 800 some weeks, right? Like that's the nature of his game. You will win batting average on accident. You will win saves on accident, because how many relievers in baseball right now get more than 25 saves in a season? That would give them an average of about one per matchup week that we have. Right. Maybe a little bit more depending on how you break it apart, but that's one, right? And we know many weeks these guys get two or three, but nobody gets two saves every week. Or if they do, it's like one legendary season for a guy, because that just doesn't happen. It's not how it works. We don't see that. So when you have that, right? Like there was Ryan Helsley last season felt like he got about two saves every single week. Right. Cause he ended the season with 49. He almost did. But again, that number, like the guys who have 25 or more, there are 13 of them. That means every team can get one. Someone's going to get two, right? Which means not every team will have one. Right. And so it can be very tough to average two saves a week. You can stream a save a week. Generally in a 12 team league, you can absolutely say like stream a save, right? It's very possible. And that's another thing that, you know, sort of when you talk, like we talk so much about streaming, but we're so against like punting, and it's a very, like these concepts are very related, because I might be like, you know, I'm not going to prioritize steals in the current environment because I like the steals I can get late in a draft. And I also feel like I can stream them, right? Any player who plays for the Nationals is going to steal 20 bases. Jesse Winker was going to steal like 30, right? And he can't steal. Like they just let him go. So, you know, when you talk about, you know, just to get back to your point on catcher in a single catcher league, you know, it's funny because you are punting the position, but you're also not, because you're like, hey, you know what? There are 13 catchers I feel comfortable with throwing out there, knowing that I can stream, right? Because there's actually a fairly good streaming pool, right? Like Ryan
14 right now. I would start Austin Wells on most teams. I'd be fine with that, honestly.
Yeah, Wells, Moreno, Jeffers, Bart, Kirk. Like, these are guys who can be interesting, especially in short spurts.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so just, you know, wheel and deal till you get one. Right. You know, like Shea Langeliers was that guy last year where you're like, yeah, I took him right at the end because, you know, he'll get some home runs and I'll see if I can find anything better. Right. Yeah. And then he ended up being the thing that was better. So you just kept him. But right. I mean, that's you can stream it. It's again, it's not punting because you're like, I'm going to take a zero. You don't have to take a zero. You can just say, you know, I'm comfortable with what I can get late.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know what, just to add on to what you said about saves, I firmly believe, and I'm going to say it with my chest here, if you're not playing in a saves holds league, you're missing out. They're more fun. It opens up the reliever pool. You get to do Ben Joyce. You get to roster Ben Joyce, who throws 100 and a billion miles an hour, even though he may not get as many saved options this year because they went and signed someone, right? So save holds leagues, I'm all for. I just want to promote my agenda here. So before we close out here, Scott, I do want to get to hitters you like beyond 250 ADP. I don't know if there's somebody immediately that comes to mind, but you are the hitting guy. So are there one or two names beyond ADP 250 that you are like hunting in drafts?
Well, I mean, we'll start with, you know, my favorite who's maybe going to start moving, but I mean, we already talked about Torkelson. I am absolutely hunting for Spencer mm-hmm. Torkelson. It's one of the reasons why I don't feel like I need a higher end first base eligible guy other than like one. I probably took one earlier and I don't need a second one in a deeper league to later, cause I'm very willing to set min picks on Spencer Torkelson. So he's a really good one. You know, I think, and really, again, it's kind of about what it is you're after. Like, are you after the boring guy? Cause I just need to fill some stats, or am I trying to chase like way upside? You can do a little bit of both with a guy who goes really late and Andrew Vaughn. It's odd that a player with his, like, I don't love him as a hitter, right? I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, there's huge upside. There's not. What you're going to get is almost certainly what you've gotten for three right. straight years with fewer RBIs because that team is absolutely putrid. But it's a lot of plate appearances. You know, he's going to play every single day. He's going to bat clean up every single day. And that's hard. That can be hard to get your hands on. Right. Again, I have to point out,
Scott, I'm so sorry to stop your roll, but there was a time and not that long ago when Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson were sitting right next to each other around like number 15 or so on prospect list. And they're like, these are going to be two guys that we're drafting next to each other at the top of drafts forever. And now you mention them right next to each other beyond ADP 250.
Well, it's because prospecting is such a science, you know,
development is here. It's like if they suck immediately, they're not going to be good anymore.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Right. No one, there's no such thing as a post type. No, the secret is you need the post type. That's when it really, you know, that's the thing you should be targeting. That's
Joey Bart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they used to talk about third year wide receivers. It's the post type, right? It's usually got to be a second or third team, right? That's the sweet spot. That's when these guys really break out. But, you know, if you want to talk, you know, after pick 250, Carlos Correa isn't quite there. He's at 225. He's someone I kind of like. Again, it's high injury risk, but there's actually upside there. But you know, he's really fun. Jonathan Aranda is someone I've had my eye on. Now, playing time is a big question. Even if they quote unquote guaranteed him a job, it's the Rays. I don't believe anything they say ever. And I also don't believe what they do. Right? Like they don't even do the same thing from week to week. So you can't put any faith in them, but I do think there's a lot, like there's quite a bit of talent there. There's a reason they're even entertaining this because they've got plenty of players who are established to play corner infield positions. But one of the reasons I think they were willing to move on from Isak Paredes, who was an incredible fit for them, right? Is because they like some of the guys they have below. And one of them was Jonathan Aranda, who doesn't really have a good position defensively, but his bat is good enough. I think he's going to play. He's got plenty of power. He made some, you didn't really see it much, but in our amazing process plus numbers that Kyle Blaine's come up for us, he made some really nice adjustments in season. While the results didn't come yet, what we're seeing sometimes with process plus is players who improve across the board. There's two ways guys improve their process plus, generally speaking. They either do it a little bit across the board because they focus on certain things, and I really like that. And other guys just get a power streak, like a Tyler Fitzgerald, and it raises their process plus, but it's all because of power and not anything else. I'm a little more skeptical of those guys. But seeing Jonathan Aranda take some steps that made a lot of sense, I think there could be something there, especially if we start seeing him play more, early in the season. I'd be interested in that for sure. I'm trying to find guys that aren't the oatmeal-y ones, because in a 12-team league, yeah, go ahead.
Let me throw a name out. And to shock no one, he's a prospect. But I'm going to go with Jacob Wilson from the Athletics. He is right now hovering... where did I see him?
500. Keep scrolling.
Oh my gosh. Really? On the NFBC I have, he's like 365. Anyway, cool. 500. Let's go there. Here's the thing. He is going to be their shortstop. Like, the opportunity is going to be there, and he should be their starting shortstop to start the year, and it should take a lot for him to lose that position, barring injury or anything. He is going to hit ninth. Okay, let's call that what it is. But the book on him is that he is just pure contact, absolutely no power, which is probably true. So I would say if you're in an average league, then he means a lot more to you than if you're in an OBP league, because he's not going to walk. But he has a great ability to hit the ball. And what makes him just slightly more interesting to me is, one, he has two home runs in spring training. This powerless player has a couple of home runs, which is interesting, especially when you consider the park that he's going to be playing in. We're talking just redraft. You don't have to hold on to him forever, right? But the park in Sacramento is going to be very friendly towards power. Doesn't mean he's going to be hunting for it or anything, but if he can lift the ball a little bit, he might have more power in these next couple of years than he will over the course of his career. So again, I take prospects. It always backfires on me, but he's someone that I think might be a little bit interesting. Just in terms of, maybe he'll have a little bit more power than you think. And I think he'll be able to hit the ball and hold his own. Maybe like, Nolan Shanuel, but from a non-power related position.
That's a good one. Another guy, I was just kind of looking at the list. People have talked about him a little bit this spring. Matt Wallner, he's a Twin. So here's the thing with Matt Wallner, and I think you've already noticed it. He has contact problems, right? And contact problems are not easy to fix. He makes good it's always really frustrating, because what happens is he's got a boatload of power and he makes good swing decisions, but the good swing decisions don't matter so much because he's getting a lot of credit for not swinging. And he is swinging when he's supposed to, but he's missing, right? Like, that's a problem. But if he, again, I don't need him to become a plus contact hitter. If he can just be not like the worst contact, ability guy, there could be something there with home runs that really pop. And it is hard to find power late. So he's another guy. He's
slated to be their leadoff hitter is the other thing. Like, they've said that they're planning on having him be their leadoff hitter, which is interesting, but I'm just going to throw this out there, Scott. And I have real trouble when I see a hitter who has a 30% strikeout rate or higher. Right. So like when I mentioned Connor Norby, I'm pretty sure he had a 30% strikeout rate, with extended time in the majors last year. And that's a little different because that was his first season. But Matt Wallner, 36% strikeout rate in 75 games, 31% strikeout rate the year before, and about the same amount. Like, that's worrisome.
Yeah. And like, it's always going to start with a three. Right.
Yeah.
But I will say, when you start getting to the ends, pretty much every stat in baseball is on a bell curve, which means most guys are between like the 40th and 60th percentile, basically. Yeah. And we start getting way out to the edges. So like a 36% strikeout rate and 261 plate appearances is super high. Just going from like a 35 to a 30 is a big deal, right? It's not easy, but if he could be in that sweet spot of like that 10%, you can find guys that live in the 10% walk rate plus 30% strikeout rate sort of zone. It's hard to let that ratio get a lot worse than that, but you can live as a power hitter knowing you're only going to hit like 240, 250. You can live in that range as long as you're getting the ball in the air and doing all the other things that Matt Wallner can do, right? There's a reason they kept rolling him out there, even though he was striking. Like, it's, I don't know if I've ever seen a guy have a 36.4% strikeout rate and a 372 OBP, right? Like, that is wild, right?
Because fair.
Again, he does have a special skill set. However, right, the margin for error for him is so thin because of those contact problems. And I think that is, I mean, it's a really important point to call out. And it's kind of nice when all you're asking a guy to do is make better decisions, because that's totally in your head. You do not have to change anything about how you play the game of baseball. You just have to change when you play the game of baseball, right? Like, when do you swing, right? I'm an A+ at holding a bat on my shoulder, right? And I am an F- swinging the bat. Matt Wallner can absolutely swing the bat, and he swings it at the right times. Those are the things that are sort of like hard to do. The problem is that he doesn't swing it in the right place, and that's a lot harder to fix. I do worry a lot about guys with contact issues, but again, we don't necessarily need them to be amazing, right? It's okay to strike out a lot. You know, you like power speed guys. I know 30% strikeout rates worry you, but I bet both of us don't care that Ellie De La Cruz does it, because he's just an absolutely special talent. Matt Wallner isn't quite that special, but like, man, if he could just get that number to 30, 31, even, he becomes a guy that you're like, oh, when he's healthy, I'm playing him. Right. But he's not there yet. And a 36% strikeout rate is about as alarming as it gets.
Yeah. And I'm a hypocrite, because I'm going to push the Denzel Clark agenda when he, you know, makes his debut, and he'll undoubtedly strike out 30%+ of the time, but I'm going to be like, he'll just, okay, let it happen. But he also has elite defense in center field, so he'll get plenty of runway. Scott, thank you so much for filling in for Nate. You'll have to come back on when he's here, and we can talk a little bit more hitting. Is there anything that you would like to plug while you are here?
The Hacks and Jacks podcast had to take a bit of a hiatus. My dear, dear friend Joe Galena had some health and life issues going on. We are back. So we're going to have me and Brett Ford are now doing this podcast. It's a lot of fun again. We're back. So check that out. That'll be on Mondays, except for this week, because I'm recording it on Monday because I was just in New York all weekend. So there's that. And also, I'd love to come back on. Maybe we'll even look at the script when we do it again.
I sent him a whole outline. We didn't touch it.
And I'm sorry. We abandoned it immediately. I got too excited. So thank you for putting that together. I'm sorry I wasted the effort, but no, this was an absolute blast.
This was a fun one. Absolutely.
I hope you all got something out of it, even if it's just like you're on your own, make your own decisions. But here's a little bit of framework.
There's nothing we can do for you.
Oh, you took Royce Lewis on, didn't have another third baseman. That sucks. But like, there are frameworks, you know, and hopefully, if nothing else, you listen to them. You don't have to use them, but maybe someone in your league did, so you'll know how to beat them.
Yeah, absolutely. So check out Hacks and Jacks. Check out the hitter list that is on pitcherlist.com. Seems like they'd have to fight that out. I don't know, but make sure to check out the hitter list. Scott puts a lot of work into that. And of course, join the Pitcherlist Discord. We have a lot of fun in there. You have access to all the wonderful writers at Pitcherlist. I annoy the prospects channel all the time. Before we sign off, I just want to say, be listening to First Pitch Podcast. We just started that up again. Jake Crumpler, who's been on the show before, is going to be doing it throughout the week. And then I will be taking weekends now. So that's a new position. I'm going to be starting, I think Friday is when my first one is going to post. So make sure to check that out as well. But for now, we appreciate you listening. For Scott Chu, filling in for Nate Kosher. Nate will be back next week. This is Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network.